You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
And welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Friday, December 1st, 2023, and you're listening to me, Grandpa Dan, streaming at RadioAlbion.com. It's not only the end of the work week, we're kicking off a brand new month, and it's the final month of the year. The older you get, the quicker Christmas comes around. It's hard to believe we are wrapping up. We are winding down 2023, and for sure, it's been a tumultuous year. I might have to try to finagle an end of the year show. Maybe I'll even try to wrangle Dr. Johnson into it. It's not much of a round table when it's just two people, but it might be a fun thing to do. I'm going to keep that on the back burner. What we're not keeping on the back burner is Sven Longshanks. I've got the support links here, as you know, or hopefully you know. His mail restrictions are lifted. Everything's back to normal. He does have a new mailing address. I've got that up. I realized just yesterday when I was working on posting up Dr. Johnson's Thursday Daily Nationalist, I had failed to put the email link back up. So I've got the email link up. If you want to sign up for that email service, it's what I use. If you live outside the UK, I honestly think that's probably the better way to go. That's just me. It's extremely cheap. I mean, I put $20 on there to send and receive. You know, you have to, it costs you a little more that he can reply. And I mean, I've been milking that same $20 now for all this time. So it's really inexpensive and it works well. And you don't have to worry about the post office flubbing it up, you know. So, but of course, you know, like with regular mail, always bear in mind that the prison is going to screen and read it. So don't be trying to be funny and edgy, you know. Be aware of UK speech laws, even though that may not affect you because you don't live in the UK. Be aware of those speech laws because it might keep your letter from going through if it violates their laws, because obviously he is in the UK. But yeah, be sure and drop him a note one way or the other. All those links are there. The Give, Send, Go link, if you want to send financial support to Sven, that's there. We're going to continue on. We're going to continue soldiering on with this until he gets released. Absolutely refuse to forget about my friend. So today's story, we're doing something a little different, and I'm going to try not to be too preachy about it. But when I saw this story the other day, I was just like, I've got to do it. We got to do it as soon as possible. This is going to be a Daily Nationalist story. Because just, yeah, it's one of those stories that kind of triggers me, to be honest. I'm kind of triggered. And this has to deal with American evangelicals and, of course, this Israel, you know, Israel stuff. And this comes from Religious News Service, RNS, Religious News Service. And the title of the article is American Evangelicals Interpret Israel-Hamas War as a Prelude to the End Times. Now, again, I'm going at this, trying not to be preachy about it, but at the same time, I'm going to tell you there's going to be times I'm going to have to lapse in. I'm just going to have to. But for the most part, that's not my goal here. We're just going to talk about these people, but I am going to have to talk about how stupid their views, how shall we say, misguided their views are. So let's go ahead and just jump off into this story and try to keep our cringe levels to a minimum. The end times are not a topic Robert Jeffress needs much prompting to talk about. But when war broke out between Israel and Hamas on October 7th, the senior pastor at First Baptist Church in Dallas and a national figure among American evangelicals quickly prepared a sermon series on the apocalypse, which would be accompanied by a forthcoming book on the subject. You ever notice that, like, a lot of these guys, these TV preachers, these mega church guys or whatever, you always notice they got a book. They've always got a book they're shilling. Oh, we got a book coming out. Be sure and buy my 5-DVD set. The coming of the end age. On November 5th, as the last notes of redemption dwelleth nigh, a hymn about Jesus' return resonated in First Baptist 3,000-seat sanctuary. Jeffress asked his audience. I'll spit it out. I promise. He asked his audience, "Are we actually living in what the Bible calls the end times?" Now, a common thread with these people, these evangelicals, and I always want to be specific who we're talking about here, because this is what we're talking about. When you say evangelicals, this is what people talk about. When Sven was out, I remember sometimes he would talk and he would sometimes say, you know, my shows have an evangelical perspective. I used to cringe at that and I kind of bristled at it. I'm like, no, I'm not. You know, I mean, I realize that, you know, what I do is kind of hard to categorize, I guess. But don't, by all means, don't lump me in with these people. One problem with this, too, is people, this is a lot, these are the group of people, a lot of people, anti-Christian people, point at and say, you know, to make a mockery of the Christian faith. Now, one of the things, the characteristics that really defines American evangelicals, in my opinion, is this obsession with the end times. And along with this obsession, their total and complete lack of understanding about what that means and the concept of the end times and what it means to the faithful and what it means to their congregation. It is really a fascinating thing, you know, to observe, because on the one hand, like I say, they're obsessed with it. And when I say the end times, we're talking the book of Revelation. It's always about the book of Revelation with these people. And they're like obsessed with trying to read the tea leaves. And you read this part here. And this means America. And I remember these same people decades ago when I was a young man. And they were talking about this part of the book of Revelation. They were hawking a book back then, too, by the way. This part of the book of Revelation, what he's talking about, this is the Soviet Union. And Soviet Union went away, and they just forgot all about that. They were wrong, but they just skip over that part and pretend they never said that. And now they're moving on to, you know, this is they just keep going. It's this obsession with the end times, particularly the book of Revelation. And the fact that they don't understand it. They don't understand the book of Revelation. They don't understand what the end times means in a biblical context. And you got these two things working together. They're obsessed with something that they don't even understand. Now, again, I'm trying not to be preachy, but we have to talk about my understanding of these. I've got to give my perspective. That's the whole point. I'm giving my perspective here. They can't ever seem to square this with the fact that in the New Testament, you know, there's several references that, you know, the apostles or whatever, or that, you know, of being in the end times. They would say these last days, we're in the last days. Well, how do they square that with that being thousands of years ago with this current obsession of no, today we're starting the end times? Because as I was saying, they don't understand it. To square it up here, before we move on, just to give the correct context, it is written to understand that for God, a day is like 1,000 years and 1,000 years is like a day. And understand that's not literal. What that means is God exists outside of time. So time, you can't, yes, the Bible will sit there and say, use terms like days, like for instance, the creation narrative. God, you know, because we have to have a chronological order to understand that God does things in a certain order, and this will happen first and then this, but you can't apply the concept of time to God because he exists outside of time. Now, for those of you, the regular listeners of the Parish of the Patriots show, these themes sound very familiar in our Christian specific segment in the second half of that show, which, by the way, if you haven't checked out the show, you need to check it out. Take a moment to plug the show. Y'all are very, for the regular listener, y'all know, well, this, we talk about these concepts a lot. So God exists outside of time, but yes, at the same time, the Bible will use references to days, you know, the end days. But again, it's written in the Bible that for God, a day is like a thousand years is like a day. It doesn't mean you equate, well, that was 1,000 years. It's to say that God exists outside of time. With this understanding, and I wanted to frame this up to understand the end times. The end times basically began as soon as Jesus was resurrected, appeared to the apostles, and ascended to heaven to the throne right hand of God. That was the beginning of the end days. That was the start. The apostles were living in the end days. You're living in the end days. I'm living in the end days, as defined in the Bible. It's not that hard. These are real complicated concepts. You know, it's not. But yet, you have these people, and so often they're quote-unquote experts. Have you ever noticed, I'm getting off into stuff and I can get back to the story, but there's just, like I say, this, you can tell I'm triggered. So often one of the things is so characteristic of clown worlds, you can't trust the experts. By the way, this isn't necessarily anything new. You can't trust the experts. You can't trust the experts who are talking about the deadly doom virus, and you can't trust, sadly, so many of these so-called religious experts. And a lot of these guys have PhD by their name, and you think, well, that means he's got a doctorate in this. He must know what he's talking about. And yet, with just a little bit of scrutiny, you can discover they really don't. Let's get back to the story. The war in Gaza is not the only sign Jefferson has submitted as evidence that the period presaging Jesus' second coming, detailed in the Bible's book of Revelation and other scriptures, is coming closer. He noted, too, rising crime rates, the proliferation of nuclear weapons, and natural disasters before announcing, "We are on the verge of the beginning of the end times." Waves of crime and natural disasters have always happened. To sit here and act like, oh my gosh, we're seeing it come to pass. Why, look, there was a hurricane. Yes, we've never had one of those before. Oh my gosh, look, there was a huge earthquake. Yeah, this is brand new. Why, this has happened all through history. How do you explain that? But they act like, it's much like the way the experts, when you hear about the latest study from the science, it's the same thing. They start off from this is the conclusion they want to have. And so they just collect the evidence that backs up that conclusion and they put it all there together. And these so-called experts are doing the exact same thing. They start with the preconception. Well, I want to prove that this is the end of days and the apocalypse. And so they take these things and they just collect this and say, see, natural disasters, rising crime rates. It's just as it was foretold in the book of Revelation. Buy my book. Things are falling into place for this great world battle fought by the superpowers of the world, as the Bible said. They will be armed with nuclear weapons. They will be armed with nuclear weapons, he said. Never mind that the men who wrote the Bible had no concept of nuclear weapons, and yet they're talking about people being... talking about people getting nuked in the scripture. Thank goodness I do pre-record these shows, because when I'm doing a story like this, I have to pause, and I'm able to pause. That way y'all get this great flow. I can pause and sit here sometimes and just shake my head. Y'all can't see me, but trust me, I do it. I sit here and shake my head, get a drink of water, try to collect myself. As I wade through this, other prominent evangelicals have taken up the theme in their sermons. The day following Hamas attack, in which Israeli cities were barraged and some 1,200 people massacred, Greg Laurie, senior pastor at the Harvest Riverside Fellowship in California, framed the violence in terms of end-time prophecy. The Bible tells us in the end times that Israel will be scattered and regathered, Laurie said. The Bible predicted hundreds of thousands. I should pause here. Okay, let's get through the quote and then we'll go back. The Bible predicted hundreds of thousands of years ago that a large force from the north of Israel will attack her after she, Israel, was regathered, and one of the allies with modern Russia or Magog will be Iran or Persia. I don't know why people sit through a sermon like this, because it's so damn stupid on his face. I mean, look, God gives you a brain and God gives you common sense. These are gifts from God. You as a man are made in the image of the Lord. God is not an idiot. If you're made in the image of the Lord, that means God gave you some common sense. You know, you're supposed to sit here and nod along when you read, when somebody spouts something off that's blatantly retarded on his face, you're supposed to use that common sense. I don't know how you would sit here and take this person seriously. Where do I start? The Bible predicted hundreds of thousands of years ago, 100,000 years ago. Hundreds of thousands of years ago, the Bible said that Russia was going to join up with Iran and attack the modern nation state of Israel, which is totally the same Israel of the Old Testament, because it's got to be. It has the same name, for goodness sake. They have a flag that has the Star of David on it, even though King David didn't. There's no mention of him having a flag with inverse triangles on it, which triangles happen to be a satanic symbol, if you're noticing anything, but we'll leave that aside. It's the same name. I always make this joke that, you know, if I owned a ranch, if I suddenly had money and I bought a ranch, and they said, what are you going to name? I'm going to register the name of my ranch and the brand on it. And I named my ranch Israel. Well, I must be the same Israel of the Old Testament, because same name. This is the level of reasoning that these people have. It's the Israel of the Bible, because it's got to be. It's the same name. I'm sure somewhere in there was "buy my book." Hundreds of thousands of years ago. When I originally read this article, I just stopped and started laughing. I lolled. Literally. Hundreds of thousands of years ago. See, the Bible says hundreds of thousands of years ago. Before calling the church to pray for peace in Jerusalem, Lori added, if you get up in the morning and read the headline, Russia attacks Israel, fasten your seatbelt, because you're seeing Bible prophecy fulfilled in your lifetime. Okay, I did a show recently, one of my Parish of the Patriot show, a Christian specific segment. And I made the observation in the statement, biblical prophecy is best understood in hindsight. That is actually where it comes into play. See, dumbasses like this, they have this obsession with using it like it's you know, using it like a crystal ball to foresee the future. Now, don't get me wrong. Yes, you Jesus said, you know, you can observe the signs and understand, you know, kind of what's going on in the world around you. He talked about, you see the leaves change on the trees. You know, you see a cloud up in the west and you know it's going to rain. Well, you interpret the times and say, well, yeah, these things are going on. But when Jesus talked about that, he was condemning the people around him, because he said, you're missing the point. Because prophecy should really is best understood in hindsight. You look back and go, oh, well, yeah, that's the fulfilling of the prophecy. We as believers can look back at Jesus coming to the earth, everything he did, crucifixion, resurrection, ascending to God. And then you look back and read through the Old Testament and those things make sense. But for the people at the time, it didn't make sense. Why? Because they were doing the same thing these evangelicals do. They were obsessed with this idea that the Messiah was going to come and set up a literal kingdom on earth for them. And because they had that preconceived notion, they couldn't see everything that was going on. Now, you can look at it in hindsight. And for instance, in the Old Testament, was when David was told your seed would set up a throne, you know, forever. It's obvious forever implies it's not going to be like a person on earth setting up a literal physical human government. But that was the obsession that they had. So that was the narrative they had created in their mind. So Jesus shows up. He's making dead people get up out of the grave. He's healing people that have been crippled their whole lives. And they're just like, well, if he's the Messiah, when's he going to overthrow the Romans? When you get obsessed, you miss the point when you get obsessed with trying to turn biblical prophecy into reading a crystal ball. And understand this. I mean, it's fine to look at the signs of the time and go, yeah, we're in turbulent times for sure. But for a Christian believer, you always have to come back to, well, what am I supposed to be doing? What does this mean to me? Well, it just means I'm supposed to go on and keep doing what I'm supposed to be doing. You know, whatever happens around me happens. You know, I mean, you have no control over it. So your best hope is you just do what the Lord expects you to do and everything's going to work out. Oh, gosh, I am going to have to say that word on this next reading. There will be pausing here. Y'all won't notice it, but there will be pausing here because, yeah, well, here we go. While apocalyptic theology is threaded throughout the Bible and came to America with the Puritans, end time prophecy has gone through cycles of popular acceptance among Christians. It has different strands, but in its most widely known version, known as dispensationalism, Israel is a linchpin to the events of the last days when, after the rapture, a coterie of 144,000 Jews are to be converted to Christ before eternity begins. And there it is. The rapture. I have to say this, and again, regular listeners of my show already know, but this isn't my regular show. This isn't the Christian specific segment in my Parish of the Patriots show. So I assume there's audience members here listening today that don't normally listen to my show. I don't know why you wouldn't want to, but nevertheless. So let me say it plainly and clearly. As somebody who has spent a considerable amount of time reading the Bible, the rapture has zero, zilch, nada, no basis in the Bible. There's nothing in the Bible about no damn rapture. It was never taught by the apostles, by Jesus, by the apostles, any of the saints throughout the centuries, never. Somewhere in the 1800s, and I believe it was a woman, dreamed up this notion of the rapture. There's nothing in the Bible. There's nothing in the church history. Nothing about that. This is what would amount. I mean, say in the 1800s, sounds like a long time ago, but it would be considered, in the biblical context, a modern invention. And that is all it is. When someone starts rambling off to you about the rapture, you can rest assured they don't know what in the hell they're talking about. Because I can tell you there is nothing, absolutely zero, zilch, nada. Nobody can point to the Bible and said that's talking about the rapture. When people start babbling about the rapture to you, one thing you can do, If you've got the patience and you're not overcome by the cringe factor, because I'm sure I say this, and I'm sure everybody knows what these people's idea. It's the idea that they're going to be beamed up like Star Trek to the USS Jesus in orbit or some shit. They're going to disappear. They, the select ones, they're going to disappear, and they're not going to have to put up with anything. You see, there's going to be really hard times coming, but you know what? They don't have to worry about facing that. It's not surprising. This is a particularly popular thing among boomers, by the way. They don't have to put up with any of the really bad stuff that's coming because they're so special. Jesus is going to beam them up like on Star Trek, and they're going to go up to the USS Jesus Christ. And then they just got, and if you ask them, okay, well, after you're raptured, then what do you do? What do you mean, what do I do? Well, I mean, what are you going to do? Okay, you're going to get beamed up to the spaceship Jesus. What are you going to do then?
Well, see, I'm going to be driving my car down the road, and suddenly everybody's going to be shocked. I'm going to be driving my car down the road. I'm going to be eating my Big Mac and drinking my Dr. Pepper. And then suddenly everybody's going to be shocked because my car's going to crash into somebody and kill them because ain't going to be nobody behind the wheel. And everybody's going to be like, oh, my gosh, hey, Joe Bob isn't behind the wheel. He done got raptured. What am I going to do? Let me tell you what I'm going to do when I get to Spaceship Jesus, Starship Jesus. First thing I'm going to do is finish that Big Mac. I paid for that bad boy. I'm going to finish my extra large Dr. Pepper, that upsize too. I'm going to kick back and watch everything unfold on the big screen. See on the big, on the Starship Jesus, there's going to be the world, the biggest eternal size big screen LCD TV. And we're going to watch all of the movie unfold. We're going to be sitting in the seats and we're going to be able to order all the popcorn and drinks we want, and we're going to watch this play out. Everybody stuck on Earth that wasn't special like I am and didn't get to be raptured, they were going to watch them go through hell on Earth. And you know what they're all going to be thinking? I wish I'd have been raptured like Joe Bob. Joe Bob got raptured. If I would have listened to Joe Bob, I might have got raptured too. They can't tell you. This is just going to be, they're just going to be there, and it's going to be great. They can't tell you specifically, like,
okay, well, anyway, yeah, no, nothing about any rapture. That's just gibberish. Evangelical Christian pastors such as Jeffress have long prompted the United States to be an actor in these events. In his second sermon in the End Times series on November 12th, Jeffress quoted the speech he gave at the ceremony dedicating the new U.S. Embassy in Jerusalem in 2018. For America to be on the right side of Israel is the same as being on the right side of history and the right side of God.
The right side of God, because Israel, because it's the same name. It's got to be the Israel from the Old Testament. They're using the same name. Same name and everything. Maybe they should try looking up and seeing when these very people started referring to themselves as Jews. Here's a hint. It wasn't hundreds of thousands of years ago. I recently asked the question, when somebody says Judeo-Christian values, you heard these people spout this off, Judeo-Christian values. You ever notice they can't ever tell you what the Judaic part of our Christian values are? Where's the shared? You know, in the name, they use that term, and it implies there's this shared value system. We're on the right side of God supporting Israel. Well, the Jewish Talmud says Jesus is boiling in a cauldron of shit in hell. So I don't really understand where that's on the right side of God. I don't really understand where the Judeo-Christian values come into play here. When I said that here recently, asking about, you know, where's the Judeo part, I pointed out that at least in Islam, Islam considers, and they never tell you this, by the way, you're never going to hear one of these people point out that in Islam views Jesus as a high prophet, I think second only to Muhammad. I'm not an expert on Islam, but I do know this much. Even in my passing understanding, I understand that in Islam views Jesus Christ as a prophet. They don't see him as the Son of God, but they do view him as a high prophet. In their religion, Islam, they do talk about Jesus returning and judgment. They just view him, though, as a prophet, not as the Son of God. I would say there's a lot more Islamo-Christian commonality than Judeo-Christian. At least you could point to that. If you, somebody said Islamo-Christian values, you could say, well, what's the shared value? Well, they do view Jesus as a key religious figure, but they only view him as a prophet, not as the Son of God. And you could say, well, okay, well, you know, there's a little commonality here. They do view him as a religious figure. What's the Judeo part? That he was a fraud and he's burning in boiling in a cauldron of shit in hell? I don't understand where that's being on the right side of God. I don't understand where the commonality of our Judeo-Christian values. It seems Judeo-Christian values is just basically we send lots of money to Israel and support them no matter what outlandish and outrageous things they do. The embassy's moving, let's see here. The embassy's move from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem was the fulfillment of a promise Donald Trump made in 2016 as he ran for president the first time, one applauded by pro-Israel evangelicals. In August 2020, as he ran for re-election, then-President Trump told a campaign rally in Wisconsin, "We moved the capital of Israel to Jerusalem. That's for the evangelicals." And that was the one thing Trump actually did was this. Everything else we were hoping to get, not so much. Also present the day Jeffers spoke in Jerusalem was the televangelist John Hagee, who apparently has never read that gluttony is a sin, who in 2006 founded Christians United for Israel, now the largest pro-Israel organization in the U.S. On October 22nd, CUFI hosted a night to honor Israel. Rally at Hagee's Cornerstone Church in San Antonio, Texas, with Israeli public figures on hand, as well as U.S. Senators Ted Cruz and Tom Cotton. You know, it's... wonder where some of this money comes from for all that. I wonder if there's a financial incentive going on here. Shall we use some of that God-given common sense here? Why, he's got this organization to support Israel. They're holding a night to honor Israel. This is what idolatry looks like, by the way. A night to honor Israel. And while we're getting accolades and boy, important people are showing. I'm wondering, do you think... that there could be a financial incentive that's going on here as well, beyond just simply buy my book. Hagee was also a speaker at the giant pro-Israel rally held on Tuesday, November 14th in Washington, where he reaffirmed his commitment to Israel. There is only one nation whose flag will fly over the ancient walls of the sacred city of Jerusalem. That nation is Israel, now and forever, he said, greeted by cheers. Well, I'm pretty sure that the British flag at one time flew over Jerusalem. I'm pretty sure many other flags have flown over Jerusalem. This is just idiotic nonsense. This is just... Let's keep going. I'm not going to get through this if I keep going off the rails over all of these statements. Claiming some 10 million members, Hagee's organization... And I'm going to say this. I said I'm going to get through this and I have to stop. You ever notice, like as I say, nobody's curious. You don't get a mega church like this in all this unless you toe in the line. They just call it like it is. Nobody's going to look at the books. Nobody's going to raise any questions. Nobody, you know, nothing, as long as you stay in line. What do you think would happen to John Hagee if he came out this week? This is a hypothetical. It's not going to happen. But if he came out on his next sermon and said, I've seen the light, and he started speaking out against Israel and against, say, the Jewish lobby and the power they hold in Washington, D.C., and began denouncing the corruption that entails. I can assure you within a week, his books would be gone through. There would be an embezzlement scam, probably a sex scandal. And within a month, he would be the disgraced former pastor of. And that's what, you know what's right. I know what's right. So it tells you what's going on with this. Okay. I'm sorry. Claiming some 10 million members, Hagee's organization has become powerful politically, according to Daniel Hummel, author of Covenant Brothers, Evangelicals, Jews, and the U.S.-Israel Relations. It's quite a large group, but it's even more significant that they are organized and have demonstrated over the years that they can actually focus their energy on a local level and a national level to advocate their positions, said Hummel. Let me tell you something, though. This stuff is a dead end. These groups like this, they've got the same future as Harley Davidson motorcycles. Their core customer base are older people, are boomers. You know, what's Harley Davidson going to do as the boomers continue to die off? That's their entire market. They know young people running out, you know, not in significant numbers. They know young people going out and buying a Harley Davidson motorcycle. They're going out and buying a Japanese crotch rocket and going 160 miles down the interstate. They ain't buying no... It's a boomer thing. Where the hell is Harley Davidson market share going to go? It's the same with these groups. They recently did a poll, and it's like all of this Israel support is by and large in the older generation. And I say boomers, there's some in the X group, you know, Generation X, that did it too, but it's mostly a boomer thing. So as that support dies off, it's limited support. The group's gatherings have become an obligatory stop for GOP presidential hopefuls wishing to articulate their support for Israel in front of Christian Zionists. Most of them don't get into the prophecy stuff, said Hummel. They'll talk more about the national interests that the U.S. has in supporting Israel and about the cultural values that Israel and the U.S. share. What are they? No one can ever tell us that, can they? They always say Israel is our greatest ally. And if you ever press them to say, okay, what do they do for us? They'll mumble, finally they'll stammer around and eventually they'll mumble something about, well, they secretly share intelligence about Arabs and stuff. But we can't tell you about that because it's national security. Because they can't tell you what they actually do for us.
It's a parasitic relationship. We give them money and they spend it. That's the relationship. They do outrageous things like bomb hospitals, and our government gives them cover for it. But Hagee often speaks about the prophecies that drive his support for Israel. A week after Hamas attacks, Hagee's Sunday sermon detailed the unfolding of the end times, while a timeline illustrating every step from Jesus' resurrection to the renovation of earth by fire was displayed in the background. The reason Hamas attacks draw us closer to the church's rapture, he claimed. The Bible blessed the Jewish people directly, and through the Jewish people blesses us, the Gentile people, he says. So I guess Jesus, according to this so-called Christian, Jesus serves no purpose in this equation. It's just about the Jews. He said before adding, Israel is God's prophetic clock. When the Jewish people are in Israel, the clock is running. When the Jewish people are out of Israel, the clock stops, he said. This is gibberish. There's nothing biblical. There's nothing backing that statement up. This is just some gibberish this fat bastard has pulled out of his ass. I'm sorry to use such colorful language. I try to keep it professional here. But seriously, he pulled that straight out of his ass. There's nothing biblical. I got to say this again. These modern day Jewish people are not the Israelites of the Old Testament. Okay. If you take nothing else away from this, understand that. I at least understand that. They're not the Israelites of the Old Testament. You cannot connect the two because they're not the same. They're not the same people. Okay? At least understand. At least, if nothing else, grasp that. The closest you could come to, you know, and this is just my theory, is you could probably maybe trace them back to like the Pharisees that were key in executing Jesus. You could trace them back to that. But going back to the actual Israel of the Old Testament, it's not the same people. I don't have time to get off into, you have these offshoots that, you know, if you were able to trace it, yeah, you could trace an offshoot, but they're not the same people. If you could trace... Now, I'm not going to get in. I'm starting to get off on something that has nothing to do with this. I have to do that on my own show sometime. Let's keep going. This logic scandalizes some scholars as well as Jews who see evangelical support for Israel as compromised by its cosmic hope for their conversion. They, Christian Zionists, believe a tiny minority of living Jews will, in the end times, convert to Christianity, and the rest will be damned to hell for their disbelief, wrote Stephen Gardner, research director at the Political Research Associates, in a 2020 essay titled End Times and Anti-Semitism. You see, these people slavishly supporting Israel, and they're still getting included as anti-Semitic. In a 2005 sermon, Hagee himself claimed God sent Adolf Hitler to perpetrate. God sent Adolf Hitler to perpetrate the Holocaust to push European Jews toward Israel. He later made clear that he didn't view either Hitler or the Holocaust as a positive. Well, I'm glad he made that clear. But end times theology need not be raw to come across as insensitive to the violence suffered by both sides in the long-running Israeli-Palestinian conflict. On November 12th, Jeffers began his sermon by asking the congregation if they knew what could explain the numerous attacks against Israel. Spiritual reasons, he said. Spiritual reasons. That's all the reason. That's the only reason Hamas would attack. That's the only reason there's conflict between Israel and the Palestinians. Spiritual reasons. This guy's a PhD, by the way. I know, because sometimes I see his advertisements on TV to come to his megachurch. Needless to say, I'm not going. This guy's a PhD. He's supposed to be. He is a big church. He's got thousands of followers. And he can't come up with the reason why there's a conflict beyond it's spiritual reasons. You see, because all of these devil people hate the Jews for no reason at all. Dr. Johnson right here, Matthew Raphael Johnson right here on Radio Albion, has done any number of shows outlining where this conflict is coming from. And it's not, quote unquote, spiritual reasons. And well, why is there a conflict? Spiritual reasons. That's not an answer, dumbass. You could, like I say, Matthew Raphael Johnson, Dr. Johnson has done any number of shows outlining from the way the Jewish settlers work. No, they don't just go set up a shop in a piece of blank desert and cultivate it, and then the Palestinians hate them because they turn this desert land into something. No, they just kill the Palestinians or use the military to push them out of their homes, and they just take them over, and now it's ours. I wonder if people might be resentful about that. Spiritual reasons. They regulate how much the people who are in a concentration camp in Gaza can even eat, down to the calorie intake of each individual person, and they don't let a bit more in, and then periodically they just carpet bomb everybody and slaughter them. I wonder why they hate the Jews. Maybe it's spiritual reasons. There couldn't be any actual reasons for this conflict. They're just spiritual. They just hate. You notice, and by the way, to make a punctuation mark on an earlier point, I got to get this wrapped up. I knew I was going to go long when I started this. On not the same people, you know, I say that they're not the same people of the Old Testament. They're not the Israel, you know, of the Old Testament. There is a reason that these people that live here now, that live there, I should say now, they call themselves Israelis. They do not call themselves Israelites, as in the Old Testament. I meant to point that out earlier and I missed that. So I just had to insert it there at the very end. Spiritual reasons. Look, there are actual real earthly reasons. There's a conflict there. If you lived in the Gaza Strip and were treated like those people are treated, you'd want to fight back too. You ain't got nothing else to lose. There's no hope, no future. They keep you hemmed up in there. You have no economy. They regulate anything that can go in there. And then every so many years, they just go ahead and thin the herd. And they brag about this, by the way, that they're doing this, thinning the herd. They're culling your numbers down. So they just carpet bomb all of you. Doesn't matter if they're apartment buildings, hospitals, doesn't matter. They cull you out. Look, that is going to generate a feeling of resentment, okay? Vague spiritual reasons why they're being picked on. Well, maybe that's what you would say if, let's say you're being rewarded in some way, shape, or form for this blinding, unwavering support. We'll wrap up on that note. Hope you enjoyed today's show. I didn't. I did. I did have the fact that I think these things have got to be addressed. As a Christian believer myself, these people are an insult and they make the faith look bad. And these are always the people that, like, you know, vehemently anti-Christian people will point to. You know, they do. But this is stupid. And you can just point it out for the foolishness that it is. It's a dead end thing. Like I say, this isn't going anywhere long term. This is evangelical stuff. It's not, it doesn't have a long term future. But the truth has merit on its own, and it always, we're called to speak, to point to the truth, especially when people are pointing about a bunch, who are rather spouting a bunch of lies in the name of Jesus. We'll wrap up on this. I hope you have a great weekend, and I hope you enjoyed the show. Be sure and check out our content next week. As always, keep the faith. We'll see you next time.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.